Well, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Buck Wolf, your questions about the weird, maybe even some of your weird stories, and then open lines next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Buck Wolf is with us, his book, The Wolf Files. And, of course, he is the news editor for AOL's Huffington Post as well. Weird stories indeed, but they also do some Huffington Post crime stories as well. When you look at these stories, Buck, and you decide, hey, let's do it, I want this story, what's the criteria? What do you look at first?
Well, you have to ask yourself before you cover a story, what can you add to it? And how can you sort of take another layer of skin off the onion, I would think.
Yeah. And when you do that, you gotta be somewhat creative in order to just magnify that, don't you?
Yeah, and the best way to get a story is to go there and to talk to people. And it's really hard to understand what's going on when you're sitting behind your desk or you're just trying to work off other people's reports.
The Internet, of course, has been just an incredible vehicle to getting this kind of information out, whether it's just through Facebook and other social media or just on people's respective websites. We have used it here on Coast to Coast, and we've evolved as well. I mean, we're in the Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we're putting out all kinds of information. It's really been an incredible tool, and you folks are using it quite wisely, too.
I tell you something, it's amazing that people are getting their news from Facebook, because it means exactly that news is coming to you from your friends and from a mix of sources that you choose. And it's a completely different world that I grew up in. I grew up on Long Island, reading Newsday, occasionally the New York Times. The paper would come at the end of the driveway, and that was our primary source of information, and you couldn't really choose, if you didn't like the way your news was covered, another newspaper, unless you went to the library. It just, the option just wasn't there. And even with the internet, until social media came around, it was really hard to know what your friends were reading. But now that's all very different.
As you begin to direct and push the apple cart for the future, Buck, what new trends do you see that might be out there?
Well, the technology has made it easy for every person to be a sort of thought leader among his group of friends and to write or point to the stories that he or she respects or thinks is interesting. And it's going to make the job of the journalist and the broadcaster so much harder, but in a lot of ways, so much more rewarding, because there's a lot more interaction with audience. And journalists and broadcasters and thought leaders are going to have to be so much more nimble, so much smarter. And it's going to be exciting. It's going to change the environment quite a bit. But it's a good thing, because a lot of ideas and a lot of subjects that mainstream media wasn't going to cover will be covered. It'll either be covered by large organizations or by communities of people who insist that certain subjects get more attention.
Will the printed newspaper still be around, or will the internet kill them all for sure?
It'll kill a lot of them, but yeah. An editor of mine said, until you could fold up a computer and take it into the men's room with you, there'll always be a newspaper.
Let's take some calls here. We'll go to Adam, truck driving in Kingman, Arizona. First-time caller, by the way. Adam, thanks. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
Big fan of your show. In 1999, I was attacked by a honey badger at the Starbucks in 4th and Plum, downtown Cincinnati.
How in the heck did that happen?
They don't know. I was in there using the telephone because 1999, nobody had a lot of cell phones, placing a telephone call, and it came down the street and went in through a carousel door, and it just went straight to my right ankle, my right foot.
Oh, my God.
It attacked me and chewed my shoe up and sent me to the hospital. And to this day, the only thing they can tell me is they don't know where it came from and that the Cincinnati Zoo's honey badger was never missing.
That's bizarre. Now, was there any litigation here?
No. I never really pursued it because it was such a bizarre thing. I had a friend with me help me get to the trauma unit down there and get my foot operated on.
Jeez.
And they did check to see with the Cincinnati Police Department because they had some problems with people smuggling in exotic animals.
Yeah.
They don't know where it came from. And what's so odd about that is that the honey badger lives like in the Middle East and around Kuwait. And this is one of the most vicious creatures on the planet.
How big is it?
It's just a little bigger than a skunk because when it first attacked me, we thought it was a skunk.
And how did they capture it after it attacked you?
They never have captured it. That's what's so bizarre and strange. It walked down the street, came into the Starbucks through the carousel door. It just went straight to my foot, attacked me, and then it went straight out the carousel door. And to this day, they still have never captured it.
Jeez. Now, here's a story, Buck, you'd probably use.
Yeah, I would. If they never captured it, how do they know it was that particular animal and not another, not one that was more native to the area that you were in?
That's a good question.
The nearest they know from what back then, you know, 1999, there was just not like a lot of cell phones, but they captured it some on the cameras down there.
Ah, okay.
And we described it, and that's what they came up with. And the nearest I knew, it looked like a large skunk, kind of like with a white patch on its back. And they said, well, that's a honey badger.
All right, thanks, Adam. You know, Buck, there's probably a lot of animals that people have, you know, in their little ranches and places like that, that we have no idea what's out there.
Oh, my gosh. Even in New York City, we always find people with zoos, sometimes in their apartments.
We might have to call you back, Buck, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Are you there now?
I am.
Yeah, there you are. We had a lot of script. Yeah. Are you on a cordless?
I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, cell phone. Okay. That's all you got. You don't have the landline, do you? So we're going to find
out. No, I'm up in my cabin.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to. Wherever you are right now, wherever you are right now, don't move. You're in the perfect spot now.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Okay. Let's go to Tom in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Yeah, in World War II, I was in the United States Navy, and I was a kamikaze pilot.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We didn't have kamikaze pilots, did we? Just the Japanese had kamikaze pilots.
Well, that's what the headline is, but I was a gunnery training officer, and one of our jobs was to fly kamikaze runs against our own destroyers to teach them the difference between a normal run of a bomber and a kamikaze run. And this was done after the kamikazes were so prevalent on the Japanese side.
Now, did you know anybody, Tom, that actually, Americans actually performed kamikaze raids?
Oh, no, that didn't happen. What we were doing is we were flying against our own destroyers to teach them how to train their guns and
how to shoot them down, huh?
Right.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
It's kind of interesting when you just start out with the headline. And it was true that I and several other people were kamikaze pilots. In that we were training flying as a kamikaze against our own destroyers to train them on the gone against a kamikaze Japanese or...
Well, now, we weren't actually, because we were training, and you were training, they weren't actually shooting at you, were they?
No, they were training their guns. They didn't shoot. But the kamikaze pilot makes a different run than a normal bomber or dive bomber. So that's what we made our runs on our own destroyer, so they would be used to it.
That's a great story and probably very necessary. You know, Tom, that's one thing, Buck, that you wouldn't think. We were training, you know, those on ships to shoot down those kamikazes that way. That's pretty novel.
I know. When when you were first telling me this, I was thinking, wow, this guy, how could it possibly be true? Maybe this guy's crazy. But then I thought, of course, if we had to train to fight Japanese kamikaze pilots, there would be people who would have to act as mock kamikaze
That's
pilots.
Right. That's a great story. Now we're going out to the Queens in New York for somebody you know, Buck. Go ahead, Lee Spiegel.
Well, you got my boss sitting there in the studio.
Yes, he's out at his cabin. Somewhere out in the woods.
Well, and you remember what happened to Whitley Strieber all those years ago when he was out in the cabin.
Well, that's right. He wrote his book Communion. Maybe we have another one coming from Buck.
Well, I'm just sitting here.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm ready to take a walk over a bed of hot coals, and that's something I think Buck would like to try someday.
Probably would.
You have to do that, Lee.
Got to tell you, Buck, Lee is one heck of a writer, as you well know.
And also one heck of a reporter, because he really goes the extra lengths to tell a story, as he did with this UFO over Loch Ness.
That's right. Absolutely. And Lee, when you write these weird stories,
yeah,
some of which Buck assigns you to, others you find on your own,
right.
I mean, you've done this all your life when you were on radio and everything. What gets you going with these kinds of stories? Because you really enjoy them.
Well, I like the most outlandish, weird stories that to most people, skeptics and debunkers would jump all over and say, it's just crap. But I would like to kind of go under the surface of a lot of these stories to see if there's any truth to it. And Buck keeps me focused on stories where he thinks I may be kind of getting astray from what the main part should be. And I will also tell you this, George, Buck is the headline master. I'm not. I can always depend on him coming up with a much better reader-grabbing headline than anything I can come up with on my own.
I love it. I love it. Well, you sit back and relax, Lee, and enjoy the show as we continue chatting with Buck. Buck, have we become, those of us who deal in this kind of field, the old National Enquirer? Because, man, I remember as a kid, and of course they're still out, but as a kid, you know, everybody would look at the National Enquirer at the newsstand at a supermarket, right? Right before you checked out, there it was, and you had a picture of, you know, a president shaking hands with an alien or something, and it was just great, great stories and material. Have we become that?
Well, I think there's part of news that's always going to grab you, and they'll go to any extent to do it. They want the Bat Boy story. And, you know, if you're uninitiated, Bat Boy was a continuing supermarket tabloid story that just became like a national obsession. And I really think that, yes, it's there is a part of news that will always be there. I think what saves us now is we have a far bigger selection of news to choose from. So it's up to consumers themselves to seek out the news sources that they trust, that speaks to them, that expands their mind, and helps them, I don't know, make decisions and live their lives better.
Well, and you just said something interesting, that they trust. I mean, what we do here at Coast to Coast, We're trying to find the truth, regardless of what the story is, whether it seems to be out of there, bizarre, strange, conspiratorial. We try to find the truth, and that's our bottom line. Yes, it's entertainment sometimes when you're dealing with stuff, but when I interview ghost hunters or people looking for UFOs or people who claim to have been abducted or people who claim that Kennedy was killed in a conspiracy, whether I believe these or not the point, we're trying to get to the bottom line, to the truth. So we don't make fun of these people, Buck, and you don't either. You just report it the way it is.
That's right. And it gets very hard when you're a journalist for a long time to keep an open mind, and you have to fight that every day, because the older that you get, the more you think you've seen it all before and that you don't have to dive into things. But the truth is, you do.
I mean, I remember when I first started doing the program, and they were so geared to doing these far out shows. They wanted me to do an interview with a woman who had relations with a reptilian. And here's a guy who was coming from the news end, like you did. And I'm saying, oh, come on now. You want me to do a 3-hour interview with a woman who claims that a reptilian sneaks into her room every night and she's got an ongoing affair with this thing? And they said, well, that's what we do. And I'm going, God, I can't do that. You know, it's just, so I did the interview with her. Her name was Pamela Stonebrook. I remember that. And she was a singer from the LA area. But we've kind of evolved, you know, the world has changed since 9/11 to the point where you can't just do the far out all the time. You've got to mix it with real things. And I think that's what you've done with the Huffington Post crime and what you call your SWAT team when you cover breaking stories too. You can't just do the strange and unusual anymore.
No, you have to realize that the world is such a big place and there's so many really legitimate stories with unanswered questions.
Yes, exactly. Let's go to Spencer in Los Angeles now. Hey, Spence, go ahead.
First, I want to say that your show is probably the best thing that I can say about having insomnia. I love the nights when I can't go to sleep and I get to listen to the whole show. So
thank you,
I want to thank you for that. And Buck, I have a question for you. And first off, I saw when I was looking you up online that you were featured in Pacific Standard Magazine, and they gave you quite a compliment on being kind of the standard bearer. Or the mantle bearer of the weird news genre. My question for you, Buck, is you know, I view you, the Huffington Post and AOL, as a legitimate news source, and a lot of times when I'm looking up odd stories, I don't know if I can trust the source that I'm reading, and I'm wondering how you go about vetting some of these stories that might seem outlandish, such as a reptilian, someone having a relationship with a reptilian, or some of the conspiracy stories that might lead on some other websites, but I think don't necessarily appear on what I consider to be a much more legitimate news site that does treat these things seriously.
And Buck, I'll let you think about that answer because we're going to take this break and we're going to come right back with that and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Buck's websites, they're all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And if you want to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Lots of information go out on those sites every day. We'll be back. And welcome back. Our final segment with Buck Wolf, author of The Wolf Files, and, of course, the editor of the Huffington Post's Weird News section. And, Buck, going back to Spencer's question from Los Angeles, where he wanted to know, with all the hard news stories that you cover, how difficult is it to distinguish between that and the entertainment? Case in point, the reptilian lady that is having little relationships with a reptilian, a story we did years ago. How do you handle that balance?
Well, when I'm reading a story and I'm starting off as a consumer of news, a reader of news, I want to know how many sources the writer of that story turned to and how many of them are primary sources, first-hand sources.
So if there's a woman who claims that she was cavorting with a reptile, did anyone see them together? Are there any authorities who can substantiate that? And I want to know her personal credibility. And I really think you have to apply all this sort of detective work to any story that you're really vested in, whether it's in the New York Times or some online website that you've never heard of. It's really up to the consumer more and more. You have to be aggressive because I think the quality of news, I'm not saying it's getting worse, but I'm saying it's getting more uneven. It's hard to trust anyone, and basically you have to be your own detective.
Well, you really do. And how would you handle stories that this program used to cover where a guy claimed that he had a shot alien and kept it in the refrigerator, or an individual saw and was witnessed on his property to an endless hole, except there were no witnesses really to that?
Well, those stories come in two flavors. One is that it's a hoaxer, a self-promoter, someone who's trying to turn a quick buck with an amazing story.
Right.
And you could generally flush those people out. The second possibility is that the person is deluded in some way. They actually believe the story to be true, but they're just sort of not on the level. They're wackos.
Mm-hmm.
The third is that it's really an unexplained phenomenon that you can't, that no one really knows whether it's true or not. And basically, you have to decide which one it is. And if it is unexplained, then you have to see how far can you personally push it to make sure that we're testing it here. Is there any sort of physical evidence we could test? Is there anyone else who could substantiate the story? Did anyone else see this alien before it went into the refrigerator? Really, those stories come in a number of different flavors, and it's up for you to decide which it is. And, these stories deserve some examination, but you really have to push it to the limit.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I get emails every day, Buck, from our listeners, and some of them say, give us more paranormal, give us more ghosts. And then I get, in the same batch of emails, an email from someone who says, you're giving us too many ghost stories or too many paranormal stories. I want things that are real, that are really, like keep doing Jade Helm 15, keep doing stories on the missing MH370 plane. And you get those two tiers of people that you satisfy one but not the other, and then vice versa. Do you run into that too?
Yes, absolutely, all the time. Because you really have to look for what the best stories are, regardless of what section you're filing it under. It doesn't matter whether it's a ghost story or a UFO story or a missing plane story. It's the question of whether it's a good story or not,
whether you have something
to say about it.
I mean, yesterday I did a story. Part of my show was on the rock group AC/DC. And going into it, I'm not from, I was not into heavy rock. I'm more of a Sinatra type guy, but I was studying the group, what they did, listening to their music. And I've known about them since the 70s, but I really started studying it when I knew I was going to get into this interview. I got to tell you, the response was overwhelmingly positive from people who are AC/DC fans who just loved it. And you just never know.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You never know what's going to be a good story, what starts out as just a typical day at work, and then suddenly it is a huge, big story, and it's taken over your life.
Off we go down to final calls. We'll go to Fraser Park, California. Joe is with us. Joe, you're on with Buck Wolf. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
This happened about 8 months ago. We were going through the town of Mojave, and which is a weird town, by the way. there was a cloud behind us that was in the shape of like a spaceship. All of a sudden, we have a torrential rainstorm. We were going north to south. We wound up coming off the concrete onto a dirt field east to west. I mean, the car actually went airborne.
Wow.
Landed on the dirt. We got out, and the strangest thing is the car was not wet. The ground under us was not wet. I asked the cop later, because we've been trying to find the street that we landed on. Asked the cop, and he's been around that area for 20 years. He says, nope, doesn't exist. Well, we know it exists because there were three people in that car.
Exactly. How does this happen, Buck? How does this happen?
What did the other people in the car have to say? Do they have the same exact story you have?
Exact. Well, the daughter in the back won't even discuss it.
In shock, practically.
But Barbara and myself, exact story. I mean, I was rolling a cigarette. I looked up, and the street ended, and we were airborne and going into the dirt.
How long were you airborne? How far do you think you traveled?
Maybe 5 feet. I mean, it wasn't nothing. It's just it was the initial shock of hitting the ground. No damage to the car. But the car was dry, and the street was dry. The dirt was dry. And we had just, I mean, it was coming down.
What do you think happened?
I have no clue.
That's the thing. You know, I've had calls, Buck, from people who have said, and I mean, they're serious. You can tell by the tone of their voice that they were in the midst of a head-on collision with another vehicle that was just steaming right at them. And as they were ready to collide, they looked at the eyes of each other, the two drivers, for example, and they said the cars went right through each other, never hit, but went right through each other, almost as if they were teleporting through each other. And they said, we came out on the other side without a scratch, without a bump, without any crashing sounds. We thought we were all dead. And both cars just continued going on their way. I mean, you hear stories like that and you just go, how does this happen? There's so much going on out there that we don't know.
Yeah.
So much.
What most impressed me with Nick Pope, the first time I spoke with him,
mm-hmm.
was this. I asked him if he had ever seen anything extraterrestrial or UFO. And he said, no, but I am positive that the people I've interviewed believe that they've seen something, that their lives have changed. This sighting, whether it was genuine or not, touched them to their very soul. It altered the course of their life. That is without debate. And it was chilling to me when I heard that the first time. And it makes perfect sense. And your caller is an example of that. I mean, this person, whatever this happened to this person, he believes it to be real. And that makes it worthy of further examination.
Do you remember the Barney and Betty Hill abduction case from New Hampshire?
Back in the 60s. I love this story, yes.
It's a classic story.
It says a lot.
When I was 21 years old, I was a radio reporter in Detroit, Michigan, and I interviewed Dr. Benjamin Simon, who was the Boston psychiatrist who handled their case. And I asked him specifically, Dr. Simon, are they telling the truth? Now, keep in mind that under hypnosis, He studied both of them individually and separately, and they came up with the same story of the abduction and what had happened. They basically corroborated each other. And so I asked him, I said, Dr. Simon, are they telling you the truth? And he said, let me say this. I don't know if what happened to them happened, but they believe it happened. They're not lying to me. They actually believe that they were abducted by some beings, extraterrestrial, that did these things to them. And they both said that separately under hypnosis. So to answer your question, are they lying? I'd have to say no, they're not. I don't know, George, what happened. I don't know. But they believe this happened to them. And that's where I'm taking, you know, my case with them. And that's, you know, I interviewed them years after the episode actually occurred. But it was amazing how he simply said, they believe it happened to them. So they're not lying.
And that's a very big statement.
Huge.
And this is why I have to have a certain amount of respect for the courage that it takes sometimes to come forward and admit you've seen something that will brand you a lunatic to a good part of the world.
Next up, Gary in Houston, Texas. You're with us. Gary, take it away.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
These days, we've got the media and the journalists, mainstream media categorized. But my feeling is that, you know, a journalist with an agenda has become a propagandist. And we're not talking about that. So if you look at the CNN and NBC, they won't talk about Hillary Clinton's obstruction of justice. They won't touch anything that's investigative reporting. So when are we going to call a spade and talk about who's a state-run propaganda and who's a real journalist? And I'll just take your answer off there. Just see what you can talk about in general. But when are we going to be honest to the American public about who's an honest journalist and who's a propagandist?
I'm not sure, Buck, we have the Woodward and Bernsteins out there anymore. I think it's changed.
Well, I think people, journalists especially, are pressed more and more to have immediate stories, and they can't consider multiple sources. And I think it's also true that news organizations cater to more specific, more segregated audiences, and people live in information ghettos. And when people go to certain news sources, they don't go for information, they go for affirmation. They want to hear people who say exactly what they believe and not exactly what they should hear.
It is going to continue going in what direction? I mean, we're constantly trying to evolve this program. You know, and tweak it a little bit here and there. What do you think is going to happen?
I think news is going to get better because readers and listeners are going to keep demanding better information, more deeper information, more researched information. And that's because they have the means to do so. They have more choices than ever before. And also, they have the ability through different media to demand it and reach out and recommend the stories that they think are valid. I think what a lot of mainstream media has found over the past few years, and they're absolutely terrified by it, is that listeners and readers have choices, and they're speaking up. And I don't necessarily think news has gotten that much worse over the past few years. It's, I think, the readers and the listeners have become more vocal about it, and they're demanding change, and they'll get that change.
I think so, too. Yeah, you know, if you pull the song from Twisted Sister, we're not going to take it anymore. I think people are at that point right now, Buck. I think they're just fed up with being lied to by government, with events happening all over the place, and they're tired of it, and they're going to start fighting back, or at least they're going to become more vocal. Do you feel that?
Right. Absolutely. And it's through social media, it's through people developing their own websites, and it's through people just not accepting one source anymore. The day of a individual news organization having basically a fist-like grip over a certain community is long gone. And more people can go, not even just nationally, but internationally, to choose their news sources and to balance out what they're listening to. And we in the media are just going to have to be more on the ball, because that's the reality.
I've told our listeners, I said, we will do whatever we have to do to bring you the truth all the time, except there's one day out of the year I want you to question whatever I report on, and that's April 1st. So whatever you hear, on that day, I want you to just say, is it or isn't it? Other than that, everything else, every other day, you can take it to the bank.
The spaghetti trees, right?
That's right, or the marshmallow trees and things like that, right? I love it. Yeah. Buck, you've got one of your books out called The Wolf Files, still available to people. How do they get it?
Yeah, you can just get it off of Amazon. And if you love us, check us out. Check out Lee Spiegel, my good friend and colleague at HuffPost Weird News.
You got it. Buck, thanks. Let's talk again, okay?
George, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Buck Wolf, Weird News. It's all over the place. Let's continue some of that with open lines, whatever's on your mind, but why don't you share your weird stories with us? I'm George Norrie, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.